Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Giant Conversations number 6. Hi, Tommy. We're back in the normal mode.
Hey, how are you, Oliver?
Wonderful.
Good.
I hope you too. And I just learned this. How are you? The only answer is great. How are you?
Absolutely.
Like what is the answer? It's not a real question, is it?
No, it really isn't. It is just a form of greeting that is you don't expect to get a real answer back. Like here in Germany, if you ask somebody how they're doing, you're going to get the full story.
Exactly.
But in the US, it's great, wonderful, doing pretty good, I think would be the lowest you would get.
Doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. And with that, we'll kick it off with our jingle and start the show.
Lovely.
So, and this time we just have we have no interviews, we have no guests. It's just us.
I love it.
Isn't it wonderful?
I'm into it.
Isn't it wonderful? Yeah. And we can talk about so much fun stuff without being interrupted by weird people like having something to say. So it's great.
I consider myself kind of weird though. It's always been a thing that people have said.
Okay. Okay. So we have one weird one because I am fully normal. Then
yeah, you're
so
stuck with good. Me.
That's good. So we kind of have different parts here. And yes, KubeCon is over. Everybody's back. Everybody is kind of like back in their normal mode. But you put in something interesting because we had a survey at the booth.
That's right. We run our surveys. I'm going to plug Typeform here. I love it. I even have the sticker on my computer. And
That's important then. Okay.
I know. It's like the only sticker I have. I'm such a dork. We gave away 2 Flipper Zeros. And as we would say in the newspaper industry in the early 2000s, it went gangbusters, which I think is the last time something went gangbusters in the newspaper was the early 2000s. So that means that we had loads of people taking the survey. In fact, we had 412 participants, and I ran that through a percentage calculator. That is 3.4% of KubeCon attendees took our survey, which okay. I would consider to be quite a bunch of people because I'm a marketer.
Quite a bunch of people, gangbusters.
Yeah, yeah.
We're throwing out the terms today.
I practiced today. The gangbusters, I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't used that in forever. What we found interesting is that one of the questions we asked were what the biggest challenges companies are facing, and only 12% of the people who took it said they couldn't think of any challenges at all.
They just wanted the Flipper Zero.
They just wanted the Flipper Zero, I guess. I mean, they're smart to put that because I use the other stuff against them being a marketer. The one thing that we saw that had the biggest challenges that the companies are facing are hiring the right people, dealing with too many tools, lacking the time for automation, which then leads to operational overload. So that was a huge challenge that those were at 30 to almost 40% for every one of those, because they could select more than one challenge.
Okay.
On the survey.
Yeah, but that seems fitting. Like that also seems fitting with the people we talk to. It's just like theoretically starting on this journey is easy. Mm-hmm. Once you get into the weeds, it's lots of tools and lots of things and lots of people and lots of updates. And suddenly you're just busy keeping stuff running and can't continue innovating like you did when you started on your Kubernetes journey. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's fitting. But anything like still seems to be the same old stuff, though the different tools seems new. I didn't see the different tools the last years.
Hmm.
You know, from a gut feeling. Obviously, I don't fully remember, but it's similar to my feeling when talking to customers is the tools proliferated. You know,
yes.
There's more and more stuff in these clusters that needs to be taken care of.
Right.
And it's more and more of it. And that's kind of possibly the advent of like GitOps and stuff to like, you need a way to automate the entire thing. By the way, I can plug an article that is coming. One of our colleagues is writing an article because with the cluster API release, I was told we always say internally CAPA for cluster API for AWS. That term doesn't even exist. So it's cluster API for AWS, not CAPA. Anyway, with our CAPA release, we need to get those words out. CAPA, CAPZ, CAPV, CAPVCD. Anyway, you can automate the entire lifecycle of the cluster and all tools in it. And we're writing an article on how to plug in Renovate to just auto-update the entire cluster and all applications at the same time. That'll come in a few days, weeks, whatever, whenever, who is writing that. We'll finish, but that I just fit perfectly with the too many tools, lacking automation, operational overload. We're really trying to get people to automate their updates more and more so it isn't taking headspace.
I think so. I mean, you got to automate everything. We're the same way on the marketing side. If it can be automated, spend the time automating it and then just pay attention to it as it's running.
Yeah. Okay. And so what else for platform teams?
Well, so yeah, the platform teams, this is the other interesting part. So even though that their companies are faced with hiring the right people, we expected them to be understaffed, but they, from what we found with the comparison of, or the ratio between a platform team and your software developers, how many people you have on each, that the ratio is good. But there still are not enough people to tackle all of the topics.
So they're actually, That doesn't sound logical. Am I missing something?
Excuse me. No, it's when we look at the ratios between how many people you have on your platform team versus how many software developers you have. And there's
that ratio. They answered what their ratio is, and based on our experience, that ratio is actually good. But we just know our customers where that ratio is actually okay. But then they have us, so the ratio might be argued to be different.
Exactly.
What's that ratio? Do you remember?
No, I don't have that in my head. I should have prepped that for you.
Okay, but you also like. Every second platform team said the stability and reliability of the platform is their biggest challenge, and only then extending functionality. So they even have they even still have a challenge of keeping it up and keeping it reliable, and then they're understaffed and can't look at functionality. And that
interesting. We'll plug this on social, and we'll throw the survey in there as well.
Maybe we can follow up in the show notes with like what the percentage is. We can plug it in afterwards. So that's cool. I like that. Like interesting results. Like still fits to like what we're doing makes sense. But I have to say that. So let's stop there. But what else happened at KubeCon?
So we always ask our attendees, our swarmies, to write any kind of notes that they have after KubeCon, and the different talks that they went to, or different subjects that were brought up. They even jot down the people who they met and how they could partner with us and things like that. One of the big topics I thought was pretty interesting was customization was pretty hot. We've mentioned the cube color tool, and it says here it adds a splash of color to your kubectl output. Okay, it's small, but it makes working with Kubernetes a lot more fun.
But that in my very early days when I still ran Linux and spent half my life trying to customize my desktop experience until I figured out that maybe Apple has enough people to figure out what the right desktop experience should be, and I should stop tinkering with like desktop stuff. I still remember like having color output in your terminal was always an important item. So yeah, I get the Cube Color tool. Probably like it's probably even confusing that it took so long of a time to come out. Not really sure when it came out. Maybe it just was all the rage now, but like that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. We also had one of our colleagues highlighted the importance of branded dev portals for enterprises. That it's not just about technology, it's about creating a cohesive experience that aligns with a company's culture.
Yeah, but I actually see that because we're obviously also going down the dev portal path, just to help with automation and leveraging a platform to allow developers to work efficiently. But yes, the branding part is interesting. So whoever is building one out there, it'll be interesting the next 2-3 years to see if you can really build a dev portal for everybody or if it needs to be a custom thing for every company to a certain extent. Because it is a great branding experience. So yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm. Others said that there was plenty of buzz around the KCP project and its potential to simplify multi-cluster deployments. The API export and import capabilities across namespaces could be a game changer.
Okay, the KCP project.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kubernetes control planes.
And then some others mentioned some emerging technologies like Cratix and its process-oriented approach to platform building, and Kepton, K-E-P-T-N, which offers application lifecycle management with promotions, metrics, and traces, and probably worth keeping an eye on those too.
Mm-hmm.
So some new tools. And then on the security front, there was some growing interest in supply chain security tools and standards, which makes sense.
We'll retouch on those based on the news. So yeah, supply chain security tooling got a totally different focus in the last few days.
I can see that.
But we'll touch up on that in the news. So let's go down our news bit.
Yes.
So we actually have, for those not having been at KubeCon, even though I still have to say, like, if you're going to a conference, go there to meet people. If you go there for the talks, you can to use that to meet people. But otherwise, as now, KubeCon presentations are available on YouTube. You can just look at them from the comfort of your couch.
Right.
And actually, we asked a bit what people liked. Beyond platform thinking at Ritchie Brothers, build things no one expects in a place no one expects, was one they listed. Boosting developer platform teams with product thinking from Spotify, and securing 900 Kubernetes clusters without PSPs. Okay, and I need to look at that one. That's interesting, especially 900 Kubernetes clusters is a given size. That is good to know. So yeah, go out there gladly. Once we post the podcast, add a few comments on whichever social platform you're using and tell us which talks you liked. There are lots of interesting talks, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just three we picked. But again, it's like this developer platform thinking, and so on and so forth, is gaining importance.
So the next part, I think, is pretty interesting. We've got two different sides of the monetizing open source, which I've been just fascinated with since I've come back from KubeCon. First, Teleport has announced a licensing change for their product. Starting in June, the Community Edition will no longer be published under the Apache 2.0 license. Instead, companies may use Teleport Community Edition on the condition that they have less than 100 employees and less than 10 million in annual recurring revenue, and companies cannot resell or embed Teleport Community Edition in their products or services. So once again, open source moving into monetizing and changing their license, whereas Mirantis has doubled down on open source. And they mentioned, and I read the press release on this, and it was very lighthearted. And we're talking about Mirantis here. I mean, this is a very, very large organization. Mm-hmm. And the CTO said that the cloud native company is putting more effort into its open source programs than ever. So it's literally shifting from the license-based monetized thing that works into more into open source now. I mean, mm-hmm. I read this as a bait and switch. Let's bring them into open source, get a lot more people on it, and then start charging them again. But after reading through it, it's...
Of course, Mirantis is often offering management of their application. So similar to us, where like we're not making money from a license, we're making money from management. So, and Teleport, I can theoretically understand their move, but it was just getting interesting. And now we'll really have to see what their licensing costs will be, mm-hmm. And how that will impact like people with 101 employees or 11 million in revenue. How steep will that get? Because it is an amazing tool, and we're very, very happy with Teleport theoretically. Obviously, we just implemented Teleport and then they changed their license. That's just an annoyance. It's their tool, so they can do however they please. So I get that. And I think Mirantis is a marketing ploy. They just figured, hey, let's talk about open source. It'll get press. And we fell into that trap and also gave them press.
They go, exactly. How easy is that? They also, they had what the Mirantis Cloud, the MCC, I think it was called. And everybody's like, oh, I didn't even know they had a cloud. So they're probably just needing to shift anyway.
But they're turning that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're really working on supporting large enterprise customers with management and so on and so forth. So yeah. That kind of like, yeah, that makes like for Mirantis, it just makes sense. It's a good marketing system. And like theoretically for us, that's when we started out, when we just said, okay, we can, if we believe in infrastructure becomes open source, we can either be a consultancy or we can manage stuff, and we like managing stuff a lot better, and it makes a lot more sense and it seems a lot more aligned. So, I can get their reasoning. Maybe we should have gotten out a press release that we do more.
That we do this.
This just is makes what we a lot do. More sense for Mirantis than us.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
I think we're still a bit too small to really have an exorbitant impact in that.
Press releases. Yeah. Those go gangbusters.
Yeah, those go gangbusters. Yeah. I'm flabbergasted how good they work. But I actually saw somewhere else that you should just really work on your social outreach and doing a podcast or doing social channels and become your own press, because press releases just don't work. And yes, they haven't for ages. So we'll see. Then we had the cloud native Night Munich meetup. GitOps and Kubernetes. Two presentations, Kubernetes fleet management with Cast API and GitOps, and Standing Flux for Fun and Profit. That's coming April 18th. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and we actually know like Mario Leander Reimer, actually called Leander, actually does the Kubernetes fleet management with Cluster API and GitOps. So we know him very, very well. Yes. So that's good. Senior software engineer at QAware. Very good friends. CTO at QAware. Very sorry. Missed the line there. And the second one is also from QAware. So that's a good one to attend if you're anywhere near Munich, and actually how we do it, Cluster API and GitOps. So fully understand. And we have a second talk that is actually, we had the discussion. Our wonderful CTO, Timo, will speak about sustainable cloud native infrastructure in Cologne. Mm-hmm. Now the question is, what do we say? Like today? Like we actually have to say a date, because we don't know when people listen to this podcast. And we're recording on the 9th.
Right.
Hence it's today.
Yes.
It's getting released on the 11th, hence it's 2 days ago, but you might listen on the 14th. And then, so So once you listen to this, Timo had held his talk about sustainability in Cologne.
Exactly. He spoke about sustainable cloud native infrastructure here in Cologne.
Yeah, that's so we can just say it happened. We need to plan better and like talk about it like a week prior. But I actually only learned about it a few days ago. But the cool thing is Michael Müller will also be there. Mm-hmm. So I think it will be a fun meetup. Fun meetup will be good.
Yeah.
Then we have a big one. And that's where it touches back on the cloud native, not cloud native, supply chain security tooling. We have a big article, if you want to read the entire timeline, on the XZ backdoor. And that is the prime example of a supply chain hack. So what happened, for those that have been living under a rock, there was a guy that actually was four guys. He kind of mimicked being some other people to give him support, who slowly but surely pushed his way into being a maintainer for XZ and then put in backdoors into XZ that could later then be exploited and that have then been found out, and like everybody was on like on it and so on and so forth. Attack was discovered on March 28th, 2024, and the entire timeline actually starts in 2021.
Wild.
So that is somebody that really took his time and really started working on this. Jia Tan actually is the guy's name. And it's a wonderful, very, very long timeline with a lot of details to go through, with a lot of links, when his first exploits came in, when his backdoors came in, and so on and so forth. So that's an amazing read. And again, like, makes clear how important security in this setting is, especially with open source. How we actually have to admit that, like, paying people for building open source stuff is important, because the main maintainer was just totally overworked and couldn't handle all the load and hence couldn't check everything. But you need a lot of maintainers and checkers and people that checks and balances and so on and so forth, especially with like these deep in their libraries that are used by a lot of different things. So nice one. Yeah. Well, not nice one. You get what I mean.
Very interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah. Read up.
So the last one we have, I found this to be, I'm going to say kind of cool, but something that I could see myself falling into as a trap. And so the company Vultr, their cloud service provider, they, and I quote, hastily removed a controversial clause from its terms of service. Now, when GDPR came out, you often have to back up on your terms of service and your privacy policy. That's where you begin. And if you're really serious about it, you need to hire experts, AKA lawyers, and you copy and paste what they put in because they cover all your bases in your best interest. But just listen to these words that they had jotted down their terms of service. And I quote, "You hereby grant to Vultr a non-exclusive," red flag, "perpetual," "irrevocable, royalty-free, fully paid up worldwide license to use, reproduce, process, adapt, publicly prefer." It goes on and on. People thought that it was that when you're using the software, that Vultr can take your content from what is ever connected to this and use it, which is not the case.
Well,
on the other hand, when you've got terms
I get the point. I'm always like, Facebook has the same thing. You know, theoretically, they have all the rights. And the thing is, Vultr kind of needs all the rights because they're distributing your content for you because it's their servers and you're just renting the servers. And And that's why lawyers put that in there, just to be safe. But it's actually not the point. I think we need to invent new language to make that like, yes, it's an because I think the irrevocable right and worldwide license and whatnot is not like, if it would have said not on your content, but on your content to provide the service you paid for,
right?
You know, something like that, but not use it on their own with your express permissions or something, then it's different. And it would, you would give them your express permission to deliver your content if you're running your website over them. That's, I mean,
you'd need to.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be like, there must be an easier way to do this.
I mean, these are all templated as well. I mean, when we got our terms of service and privacy policies, we went through and scraped everything and discussed with an attorney and read through it over and over. And then I took a block of it, copied it, and pasted it, and found it in three different areas, because this is what is accepted in online for these things. But when we always need to fall back on it, if anything were to happen. So better verbiage would definitely have been, would have saved them a lot of headache.
Yeah.
They just deleted it. They didn't even, I mean, that's a very important clause, and they just took it out.
Yeah. And on the other hand, like we had that example also, like theoretically Vercel was bad at comms. At the same time, I think they're not bad in the sense, like they changed how their bandwidth pricing works. But if you change how your bandwidth pricing works, some people will have higher bandwidth costs. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is. But the CEO just took the time and answered and said, okay, 92% of the customers, people have like lower bandwidth costs and will work with you to lower your bandwidth costs if you're above and not charge you for the higher bandwidth cost for 3 months while we share optimization tips. And that kind of makes sense. You know, and they obviously Vercel is on the road to going public, so they need to make sure they make the right amount of revenue. And it's not like they own their own dark fiber, so they need to buy bandwidth. And depending on where they run, that's relatively expensive. If they run on AWS, I don't know where they run, they will pay through the nose. People in Norway say, like, how can CloudFront do it then? Cloudflare. There, see, always mixed up. Like I think that was when Amazon called their CDN CloudFront after Cloudflare existed, that was a frontal attack. Anyway, Cloudflare actually has their own servers and their own dark fiber and can do totally different pricing plays. That's why they have cheap bandwidth and so on and so forth. And there's actually a very old article by Cloudflare. I'll look that up and put it in the show notes, like how much cheaper their bandwidth is and how AWS bandwidth works and stuff. So, I mean, people need to change something, and communication is hard. And some people will always be hit by bad effects of that communication.
Right. You're right, though, when the CEO put the information out and then got backlash just from one person's retweet and then a copy and paste of half of the email, just latching on to one single thing. This CTO or CEO was there to reply and take care of all of the miscommunication directly, which is fantastic. I mean, I think they handled it very well.
That kind of puts us actually for a long time again on our 30-minute mark that we actually wanted to achieve. So that's good. Please, people, like, subscribe, share this thing with your friends and colleagues and send it around. We'll probably have another guest next week again and talk about something a bit more technological and iterate around and figure out what we do. If you want to go out, gladly tell us which episode you like best up till now for us to figure out what you like and what you would like to hear more of.
I love it.
Then, Tommy, take care. It's been a pleasure.
Oliver, it's great seeing you as always.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.